here in Gimel, in the next section in the Akdamas Rambam to Mishnayos. And he had explained, he had made an excursion into the world of Nevuah and what Nevi'im can do, what they can't do, and so on. And his basic point was, Torah does not travel through the route of Nevuah per se, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give any more new Torah. Nevi'im might double up as being Talmid Chachamim and they're part of Mesoras, but not through Nevuah. Gimel. V'chashemes Yeshua v'ashalom. Masa mashekibul min apirish. So when Yeshua died, he gave over everything that he had in terms of the Torah Shebal Peh of the first order, which is the explanations, umasha hutza bizmanoi, and v'leinaf l'boi machloikis, and all those items that they had learnt through limudim, and there had been no arguments on it, he gave that over. Umashenof lebo machlokas, v'nifzik bo kedas harov. And those items that there had been an argument, and there was a clear hachra, like the rov, all that information he gave out to the skenim. So the fact that the Rambam seems to divide those two categories is interesting, because Lechura, once the Beis Din had already made up its mind and had paskind, what difference is it if it started out as consensus or merely as rov? But be it as it may, the Rambam lists all three categories: the things that were clearly just for Moshe, the basic explanation of mitzvahs; the things that there had been arguments, that there had been questions with no need to resolve an argument; and those things that had an argument, but there had been some sort, but there was a resolution. The skenim passed it on to Nevi'im, va Nevi'im k'tzasam l'k'tzasam. So all of this is a process of mesiras haTorah. V'lo hoya zman shlohoisa b'izbeinus shlohoisa b'izbeinus v'laras telodis. There never was a time that they didn't think into what had been there before and extrapolated new halachas. V'oisim anshe kol dor divrei kodmeim ikar, and they would make that which was there before the ikar umotziyim mehem umolidim tolados. Let's stop and talk about this a minute. It's relevant to a few other areas. The Rambam says that Talmud Torah, if you look in Hilchas Talmud Torah, the Rambam has the following setup. A person is mechuyev to learn Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara, and he should divide up his time into three. That's a Gemara, basically. That is not being mechadish anything. Then he says, that's all true until such time as he has yet to have learned Kala Torah Kula. Once he's learned Kala Torah Kula, he then retains Chazara time for retaining that information, and he spends most of his time in Gemara. Now, Gemara does not mean the physical Gemara that we have. If Gemara means the Mishnah, let's put it this way. It says there are three things. It's Mikra, there's Mishnah, there's Gemara. Mikra is very easily defined. It's Tanakh, starts with Bereishis Bara, it finishes with the end of Divrei Yomim, and so on. That is quite easily defined. Or Megillas Esther. The harder one is Mishnah. Mishnah are those halachas baal peh that have been definitely set in a definitive way. So those halachas that are already set, and this is what they are, and this is how they are, that is Mishnah. Gemara is our investigation, analysis, and so on of the material that has come to us. So we always have in Torah Shebaal Peh a corpus of halachas that have come to us through Mesoris, and it may have been the pulpit of the prior generation. So, for instance, for us, Gemara is really Mishnah. The Gemara that we have in our Shas is set. We can't argue on that. And that for us is a given. It might be also like something like a Shulchan Aruch, which, according to many poskim, you're a Torah b'dvar Mishnah. If you messed up Mufurish Shulchan Aruch, so you have what you have, and then the chiyuv to keep learning is to keep investigating, thinking into that which you have covered already, and working through, a deeper understanding of it, fleshing out all the ramifications, applying it by analogy, defining it in a way that you sort of show the distinction rather than the analogy. All of that goes into what the Rambam calls Gemara. And that's the Etzem Talmud Torah. That's the primary Talmud Torah that we have. And therefore, he says, there never was a time that you didn't have his bonus for Lodas Toladas, that people didn't think into it and produce more Torah. The Rambam, I guess, is coming tell us that it's not, for instance, one could say a certain generation, a certain span of time, they really had no new shilas, and therefore they didn't need to be mechadish any Torah. Everything, pretty much life ran with the rhythm that it's normal, and anything that had already been paskin was sufficient. The Ram says there never was a generation that didn't have his bonus or toladas, because that in itself, in many ways, is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Ve'osim anshe kol dor divrei kodmeim ika, and for each generation, that which the previous generation said is the ikar, umotziyim mehem, and then they derive new halachas umolidin toladas. And that's more or less the pattern that we do. We don't go back three generations and argue. We rather, every generation moves forward and says, well, based on these shittas here and those shittas there, this would come out of Nafkamin, that would come out of Nafkamin, and let's apply it in this case, in that case, in the other case. So you usually hold on to the Mesoris that you have, and you extrapolate and extend it further. Va'ikrim amikubalim. Yeah? So correct. It's every generation's evaluation of where they feel they're equals, just that the time span didn't make a difference, or where they feel there's this huge gap. I guess it's a sense that the poskim have and so on, where they feel they belong, arguing where they don't feel. And yes, it leads itself open to all sorts of, you can't absolutely prove that I can't argue out here or I can't argue with him, but at the end of the day, there's some sort of sense of a consensus, a general sense of what. But be it as it may, whether it's one generation or five generations, but there are clear segments of what we've taken as the given and where we are still in the process of moving forward. Then he says, "Va'ikrim amekubalim ein machlokes behem," and those things that were accepted as having been passed down from Moshe does not have any machlokes in it. And we'll see later a little bit more about that. Now he says, "Ad she'igiyaz man ha'shekhnas ha'gdola," all of this was true until it reached the times of Shnei Zagdola. Ve'im chages chay malachi, Daniel Chananya Mishov Azaya, Zasof and Chemi Chalkayo, Motzur Bov and Shaltiel, Umetzura fel Elu Hanevim, Tashlum Mea ve'esim Zokim Nachorash Vamaske. Then they had 120 people from the great Talmid Chachamim, Medomeim, Vizbonu Gam Heim Kumosha Sukod Meim, Vigozu Xeris Viskinu Takonis. And they were Gezek Zeres and Metakonis. And the last one of that group, who are Rishon Chacham and Iske Mishnah, the first Chacham, which is Shimon HaTzadik, was the Kohen Gadol in that Dor. Now, there's something here. What's he adding about the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah? Basically, this is a continuation of what was there before. It's not in any sense different. It was a Besna Gadol, and they made all sorts of takana and so on. Where does it differ from the door before that, the door before that, the door before that? So I think if you look at the Rambam carefully, and in fact certainly bear him out, the Rambam is discussing. The Rambam is talking over here about Gzeiris and Takanis. Now, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah in their role as getting down with clarity all the facts already there, and using Yud Gimel Midas to extrapolate the Rises, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah is not significantly different than the Besdin before them. And there'd be no real need to single them out. I think what he's trying to explain is that they were unique in the volume of takanis and gzeiros that they made. I think, that's I think the point that he's saying. Those are words he's using, and certainly it makes a lot of sense. I want to add something, which I think makes a lot of sense in the context. The Rambam doesn't say it's my addition. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah was the Besdin that spanned the Klal Yisrael's churban, leaving Eretz Yisrael, being in Golos, and coming back again to Eretz Yisrael under a very, very stunted government and so on. It was the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah realized that Klal Yisrael may not stay in Yisrael forever, will not have Ashuras HaShchina forever, and all of those things, and they needed to make all sorts of takanis that would allow Klal Yisrael to function under all circumstances. Therefore, what they're memorable for are takanis that really, really are the basis for religious life outside the outside Eretz Yisrael, outside of Beis Hamikdash, and so on. So I would hazard a guess. Again, I don't see any clue for the Rambam, but the takanis were especially focused in the area of making institutions, whether it's how to daven and so on, that would make the tefillah survival of Klal Yisrael in you know, even when they're in Golas. So he says, "V'achan nashim oisa chavura tahira, who rishna chomis kamei mishnah v'shimin atzadik." The last one mentioned, who is a member of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah of that club, was the first one of mentioned in the mishnah. This is an idea that it's in a lot of the sfarim. You have it in the sfarim that deal more with the Pnimius of Torah, that in order for something to be a link, it requires to be a subsection of both circles that it's trying to link together. So let's take a physical example. When you have two rings, you want to attach them with a ring, the next ring is going to have to be attached to both the first and the second ring, and that middle ring, by virtue of the fact that it's attached to both of them, makes it one continuous ring. If I want to act as a mediator between two people, I need to gain the trust of each person who will feel that I am advocating for him. That's the way in which it can work, ought to work. The anytime you have a chibur, connection to things, it means there's something that is of both elements and therefore it connects the two together. Just like you have a shadchan knows the boy and the girl, and that's how he gets the shidduch going. We hope. Okay, so he said. So he says the first one of the Tannoim was the last one of Ashkenaz Hagdola. You have it. I remember as a kid, it sort of irked me when you have a phrase like Rav Tana Hu Polik, that since Rav is like a Tana, he could argue. So I guess what bothered me in a very kid way was the lack of neatness of categorizing. Okay, so make a clear line, make a clear line and say Rav is a Tana or Rav is not a Tana. What's Rav Tana or Polik? Rav, usually we find him in the Gemara, but if he ever wants to put on a Tana hat, we let him put on a Tana hat. Always kind of found it to very irksome, you know, I guess maybe it's a bit of a childish way, but just what it means. And the answer is, that's exactly the Nakuda. It's, Rav is, it needs to be both a Tana and an Amora to have this property of being able to be mechaber the two together. So the Rama mentions that Shimon HaTzadik was both the end of Ashkenaz HaGdola and the Yidka Noyim, because that property is very important. Because she'igia zman achreim ol rabina kodesh al sholem v'yoyochid b'doirei v'echad b'zmanei. And Tanoim, the Tkufa Noyim kept going to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who was an incredible person. He was a person that Kadosh Baruch Hu gathered in him many extraordinary midos, skulos. Skulos doesn't mean the way we use the word skulos. Skulos means worthy attributes. So much so that people called him Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Voyesh Mayuda's name was Yehuda. Bahaya betachas hachachma verum hamayla. He was extraordinary. He had the ultimate wisdom and stature. K'moisha amru, like Chazal said, mimei moisha drebi l'ro l'orina teiru gdula makam echad. Now, this is, let's stop a second and talk about this. The klal gadol is, in Judaism, there are no icons, there are no hagiographies in sense of we worship Saint this, Saint that, Saint Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Rambam spending a paragraph here about how wonderful Rabbeinu HaKadosh was is not doing it to inspire us with great stories of Gedolim. What he's doing is, and like we once spoke possibly here about Moshe Rabbeinu, that when we speak about how Moshe Rabbeinu was a prophet of a completely different stature than anyone else, it's not to tell us how wonderful Moshe was, it's to tell us how credible his teachings are. Somebody who's who has a so-so understanding, so he didn't wantonly fudge his teachings, but we're suspicious that he may not really understand. So when saying Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah was totally clear, and no Navi ever stood in the same rank as Moshe, is really a way of giving us his credentials. And that's what's so important over here. The same thing is true with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is our most concrete form of Torah Sheba'al Peh. We would not be able to have the confidence in the Torah Sheba'al Peh that we have had we had real issues with the Tana. If the editor of the Mishnayos is somebody who is not 100% trustworthy, then the Mishnayos is not trustworthy. How can we learn from a Mishnah that we're not sure? Yes, the Talmud were great people, but the person writing the Mishnah down, who knows what he understood, what he didn't understand? That's the issue. So therefore, he says that the editor of the Mishnah, which through whom we have all the Mishnayos that we have, it's Rabbi Nakata sifted it, and whatever we have, he's the one who makes it. He's the one who makes it happen. He's the one who we trust or don't trust Mishnayos based on Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So he says, therefore, our ability to relate to him needs to be buttressed. So if I tell you, well, did you see what the doctor wrote instructions for you? I say, great, the doctor himself wrote instructions. No, somebody copied from him, you know, his secretary. Well, did she understand what he said? Did she know? We need to have that understanding of Rebbe. So let's look at the qualities that the Rambam lists about Rebbe Nachkadosh. Voy betachlis ha-chochma v'ruma maila. He was... yes, please. Well, you know, by admission, if Rabbeinu HaKadosh is... If you can't, you know, you can distrust somebody because he deliberately falsified something. You can distrust somebody because he didn't quite understand it to its fullest depth. He would heard things and he was saying it over and trying his best to be honest, but he didn't know exactly what he was hearing. So your trust is only as good as can you trust that he really understood what was said? You'll find people will write up shmuzin from somebody, shurim, and a lot of the times it depends who wrote it, and you can see that they're both sort of echoing the same words, but one of them is giving us something that we really understand, and one of them you see clearly just somehow didn't get it. I always say that the biography about a Gadol usually tells you more about the biographer than it does about the topic of the biography, because it, you know, what did this person see in the other person? What is he capable of perceiving the other person? So if Rabbeinu HaKadosh would be anything less than the greatest, than a person of that stature, it would weaken our faith in the Mishnah. So he says, "His gadol b'tachas achsidus v'anova v'rachokas ha'tanugim." I think that he's focusing on things that are very important in terms of understanding. For instance, anova, modesty, is a very important quality as regards the integrity of Kivova, because if you don't understand, you ask. You don't assume things automatically. Another is a very important mida that goes into understanding the other person and being able to be relied on. Haughtiness or arrogance is a real barrier to telling the truth, because if I didn't understand, I wouldn't want to say so I'll just say what I think he said. Also, our Chokas HaTanugim, the Rambam in many places gives us to understand that a person who is very caught up with physical pleasures is usually less than is usually able to less than fully engage in something that's ruchnis. The person lacks in the fineness of mind because he doesn't have the ability to focus all his mind on it. Then he says a very fascinating insight. This is something, I guess, on the Rambam would bring it. It says, "Vayetzach loshen umuflag mikol odem b'loshen ha'ivris." He had a very crisp and extraordinary command of the Hebrew language. Ad shechachom aleihem hasholim loindin pirush mashen estapek lehem mimilos hamikra medivrei avodo mishamshav. V'zeh ha'mefarshim ha'Talmud. So he says that there's a Gemara like this. And this is, the Rambam is telling us the pshat without the Gemara. The Gemara says that the Rabbanan didn't know what the certain word meant, so they went to the maid, or Rabbein HaKadosh, and he asked her, what does this word mean? What does this word mean? What does this word mean? And she told him what each word means based on a pasuk. The story as it stands in itself, you ask yourself, huh? Like, okay, I mean, what's the point of it? And what is the point of that story? It says they didn't know, and they went and they asked the maid of Rabbein HaKadosh, and she told them. So the Rambam says the point of that story was that they, to show you how great the command of the language and the precision of Rabbeinu HaKadosh in his use of his words was, that even the people in his household could answer philological issues and obscure words and words that you had to derive their meanings from psukim and so on. That showed you on what Rabbeinu HaKadosh must have been. Now, you'll ask yourself, why is that important? If, let's say, somebody would tell you Rabbeinu HaKadosh was a beautiful calligrapher, it may not be true, but it's irrelevant. I mean, yes, Rabbeinu HaKadosh had beautiful language, but what's the point of it? I mean, yes, he was a great Hebraist, the last of the great Hebraists, with a rich vocabulary, command of language. Great. So what? I'm sure there are many other lovely things to say about Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And I think the pshat is as follows. I once heard this from Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, and I think just a very true statement. Someone asked him, how much can you be medayik from a rishon, from a sefer? So Rabbi Yaakov answered, in direct proportion to the amount of diuk, precision, that the person had put into it when writing it. In other words, sometimes a person writes sloppily. Sometimes a person writes at length to be user-friendly, where basically he's saying, don't nitpick my words, but you'll get the idea as I explain and give you stories and talk about it and so on and so forth. So those are all types of experiences that don't give that sense. But when you have a sefer, like, let's say, Rashi, which we understand to have been written with extraordinary precision, we can unfold so much information. If Rashi wrote with precision, meaning that the words are all meant to count, and these are the correct words and terms and descriptions to use, then we can roll it back and say to ourselves, why is this the particular case that we're talking about, so on and so forth. So if I give you a case, for instance, let's say I'm talking to you and I say, I'm going to be very strict with rules in school. Let's say somebody's going to come without a tie, he won't be able to take a test, whatever it is. So if I'm a type of kind of a person who speaks like off the cuff, then I say, okay, that's what he meant, you know. But if I'm somebody who's very, very medactic on my words, someone will ask, well, why did he use that example? There are 100 rules in the school. Did he pick that example for a reason? Was that actually the point of what he was saying? Did he mean to pick something minute and everyone should figure out what would be the worst case scenario? Did he mean to pick something really bad and draw a line that anything that smaller infringements he doesn't plan? And so on. It's fascinating is, the Rambam writes in his Akdamah to the Rambam that he's going to use the Lashon HaMishnah. In other words, the Hebrew that the Rambam uses in his Sefer. We have the Hebrew of Tanakh is one strata of Hebrew. It's one period of Hebrew. It's certainly very different than the Mishnah's Hebrew. And the Gemara's is also very different. Gemara is a mixture of Hebrew and Aramaic, and also different. There are Lashonis in the Mishnah that don't appear in Gemara, and many vice versa for sure not. The Lashon HaMishnah, and the Rambam consciously chose the Lashon HaMishnah because that's the Lashon that fits well. It has a certain compactness to it that allows to put a lot of information in few words. And that's why the Mishnah, the Gemara has a klal, that if a Mishnah omits something, we don't see it necessarily as not existing. The Mishnah omits something, and we say, okay, we were meant to deduce it from someplace else, from another place, and we were to ask one and the other, and so on and so forth. And by using a lot of deduction, we can arrive at the meaning. In a Gemara, that doesn't exist. The Gemara says he's an Amora v'Avelim Farish. An Amora is expected to say what he wants, and if he doesn't say what he wants, then he didn't mean it. We don't put words into an Amora's mouth, because that's the nature of it. The Mishnah is meant to be as precise as possible, and the reasons given for it, there's reasons that it's something where it says because there was no heta to write Torah down, Torah Shebal Peh, except for it being forgotten, so the minimal needed not to forget it. But I don't know if you need that, or the Rambam himself, when he speaks in Hilchos Deos about Shtika, says words need, the beauty of words, the wisdom of words, are words that carry the maximum of meaning with the minimum of verbiage. That's the way in which words need to be written. A maximum of meaning tucked into a minimum of words. And I once heard from Rabbi Shapiro, a diuk that he heard from Reb Hutna, really amazing. It says that when the Rambam speaks there about shtika, he says that for Omru, they said about Rav, Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Shaloisach Sicha B'Teilem Yamov, that he never spoke Dvarim B'Teilem, empty words. So he asked, well, the Rav himself is, he says, Rav, the Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. If somebody hasn't heard of who Rav was, it's highly doubtful that by introducing him as Rabbeinu HaKadosh's Talmud, you become enlightened. The amount of people who've heard of Rabbeinu HaKadosh but didn't hear of Rav are minimal. They're very, very small. So, you should have said Rav, one of the great Amoraim. What does it mean, Rav Talmud Rabbeinu HaKadosh? So, he said one explanation, a little bit different, touched on a similar point, but I don't want to go into it because it's a whole inyan of atzmoy. But another nuance of it is this mida of being of being precise, concise, and sparse with words is a mida of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, because that's Mishnayis. So he says Rav's having this mida of being very, very concise with his words, it's not like a tzitkis that he picked up. This is Rabbeinu HaKadosh's shita, that words need to maximize themselves and contain the greatest amount of meaning without any, with least amount of excess. That's what he was trying to say. It's also the reason, and Sir Moshe said, Rav Tana Hu Palik. Rav has the status of a Tana and can argue in a Mishnah, because he had that level of conciseness. I mean, the one thing that it's been a long time, but I think Rav Moshe also explained, it says that you should learn Mishnayis for somebody who's Nifta, because Mishnayis is Oishis Neshama. So he said also, he knows the Neshama is the core, and the Guf is sort of the expression of it, it's the outer layer of it. The Neshama is the core of it. Mishnah is the core of Torah Shebal Peh, and the property of being core that's most significant is to contain in a compact way whatever the fullness of it has. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh being so gifted in language is not just a lovely thing to say about him, but it's also, it means when we learn Mishnah, we all of the chasur mechsi v'achikatani, this mission like him and kri hachi and so on, all of it is absolutely appropriate because he actually crafted things in such a way. Then he says, "V'hoyle mina momen v'rocha v'yecholas." He had a lot of money. Now that's always a good thing, but what is it? What's the v'hoyle mina momen v'rocha v'yecholas? Like, what's the? Why is that important? So, I think what he means to emphasize is the second half. So he had much money, and therefore the ability to make anything happen. He could gather together all the shmuels. He could bring the people together. He was able to exhaust every resource in Klal Yisrael. He was able to get all the people at Shmuel's who had written down notes and so on together in order to clarify the Mishnah. Shenema, he brings a Chazal, a Yore, the Rebbe's stable boy, Havi Osim Shvar Malka, was wealthy than Shvar Malka. He therefore, after the hirchiv means he gave them money or comfort. Ve'ribes Torah b'Yisrael, and he was marbe Torah b'Yisrael. Ve'kibes hashmuas v'amar machlokas amurim azot ben yomav. He gathered in all of the various teachings that people had gathered until that point. And he himself was one of the Bali Mesora, Holvu Kibul Mishima Ovid, because he was Mekabel from Shimon, his father, who got from Gamliel, Shekibul Mishimon Aviv, Shekibul Gamliel Aviv, Shekibul Mishimon Aviv, Shekibul Mihil Aviv, Shekibul Mishraim Vavtali Rabbeisov, Shekibul Yudim Tabe, Shemin Shotach, Shekibul Shemin Prachin Tar Bailey, Shekibul Esme Ezra Yis Ibn Echon, Shekibul Tignes Yisocho, Shekibul Mishimon Atzad, Shekibul Ezra, Fishrek Nasek Dola. So the Rambam lists the exact chain of how Rabbeinu HaKadosh was also part of Bali Mesora. Ve'ezim Yibark Ben Uriah, Rabbi Yibark Ben Yirmiyah, Yirmiyah, and Korkiv Yirmiyah Lesafik, Mishakar Ben Aviyim, Novi Nova Eskenim, Atikim Yeshua, Shkim Yimaisha. So he's trying to link Rabbeinu HaKadosh back to the very, very heart of the beginning of Mesoras. So he has two things to say about Rabbeinu HaKadosh. One is, he himself was at the very core of Mesoras HaTorah, and therefore he wasn't an outsider who came along, but he lived it himself, and he had the ability to gather in. So he also collected everything that was, and was able to sift through it and to make some sort of seder in the stuff. I want to add a sort of a side footnote that I think is significant. You find two types of historians. You find a person who may have known somebody else, or may have been during a certain tkufa, and he has very, very fresh personal experiences with a person, his biography, an event, an era, and so on. That's one type of historian, and that tends to be intuitive and anecdotal. And then you have somebody who sits in the library, let's say he himself never was there, sits in the library, gathers all of the documents that there are, and goes out to the field and gets a lot of stories together and so on and so forth, and he paints a picture of a certain era. Each one of these has a disadvantage. The first one is giving us over his impressions, which is wonderful, but they may be a distortion of what the reality was. He may have seen only one segment. He may have a personal way of looking at things, a personal bias. He may skip out on stuff. You don't know. And therefore, it always begs the question of accuracy. On the other hand, the person may a person may go to a person may sit in the library and do something about, I don't know, Lenin, and read and see documents and so forth, which gives it a certain accuracy on the one hand, but if you didn't live it, if you weren't there, you don't know the flavor of it, sometimes you can make very gross distortions, even if the papers and the evidence is something, but unless you have the exact flavor of it, you're missing something very important. If Rabbeinu HaKadosh would have been one of the Matike HaShmur, one of the Bali Mesoras, but had not gathered in all the different Shmuras and so on, it would be lacking. If, on the other hand, he was like this great collector, and he himself wasn't of stature to be one of the Matike HaShmur, but rather was kind of did a doctorate or postdoctorate even on the development of the Talmud since Joshua till today, and he would have gone and gathered all the documents and shmuas and information, it would be very, very nice, but it wouldn't have, you know, I mean, he's an outsider putting stuff together. Rabbeinu HaKadosh was both. He was a Baal Mesoras in his own right, and he gathered together the shmuas and everything else that everyone else had done. And together it means that there was a certain shleimus to it that once again allows us to feel that the best that humanly is possible to have brought down these shmuas with the access to us has taken place. Any questions? Okay, what? So I am correct. So I think it's just that the Nevi'im, we have the names. The Skenim, we don't have the names. They're just listed as Skenim. So the best we can say about the Skenim is generically Skenim. Nevi'im, we pretty much have names of many of the Nevi'im and where they fit in historically. I think that's the reason. But you're right. I don't see... someone once showed me a Lashna Rambam about, I think, Takanas Atfila, that it says amongst them were Nevi'im, and this person had a shtickle Torah about the chshivas of a Besen that has Nevi'im included in it. I don't know. I haven't been able to get a sense of how emes and accurate and so on, but I did hear somebody once say something about it. Okay.